from KQED.
This is the California Report. Good morning. I'm John Sepulveda, and we begin this morning in church. That's because President Trump's 34th executive order could make it easier to mix religion and politics. It's in the name of religious freedom, and it's, you guessed it, controversial. We hear why from our LA bureau chief, Stephen Cuevas.
The president's action is aimed at declawing the Johnson Amendment, a 1954 law that prohibits places of worship from openly endorsing or fundraising for or against a particular candidate or party. All Saints Episcopal Church in Pasadena learned what can happen when you allegedly run afoul.
We ran into our own issues with the IRS by willing to be an anti-war church during the Iraq War.
Susan Russell is a reverend at All Saints, which has a history of championing progressive causes. She says when a former rector criticized President George W. Bush in a sermon, the IRS threatened to yank All Saints' tax-exempt status under the Johnson Amendment. President Trump's tweak to the law essentially discourages the IRS from taking any adverse action in such cases, but it also gives the agency maximum discretion in deciding. Russell says it's a bad idea.
What is at jeopardy is not religious liberty, but financial accountability, and that we have yet another place where dark money can be plowed into a tax-exempt entity to fund campaigns.
The order is also somewhat of a disappointment for some conservatives, including Robert Tyler. He's an attorney with Advocates for Faith and Freedom, a conservative Christian legal defense group near Orange County. Tyler says Trump's action falls short of guaranteeing protection for religious leaders who may engage in politics from the pulpit.
I would advise my clients that even though the executive order says what it says, there is a fair possibility that the IRS is going to thumb their nose at Donald Trump and go ahead and enforce the Johnson Amendment anyway.
Tyler is among those who would like to see the law abolished altogether, but that would require an act of Congress. For the California Report, I'm Stephen Cuevas in Los Angeles.
Let's move on now to immigration. For decades, the federal government has relied on local jails, including some here in California, to hold people facing deportation. Now, as immigration officials seek to deport more immigrants, they are looking for more places to lock up those immigrants. KQED's Julie Small and Lisa Pickoff-White have been investigating what that could mean for California. Today, Julie looks at a push to ensure humane conditions for detainees here.
In California, five counties and three cities detain thousands of people a year for immigration and customs enforcement and get millions of dollars to do it. But some jails are facing complaints, even lawsuits, for allegedly neglecting or abusing detainees and violating their due process rights. State Senator Ricardo Lara says jails in California must do better.
Access to medication, being able to call an attorney, a family or friend to let them know where they're housed. These are all minimum rights that any person that's incarcerated currently has, but not if you're an immigrant, refugee, or asylum seeker in a detention center in California.
The Obama administration established standards for ICE detention in 2011 to ensure people awaiting their day in immigration court have access to legal services, medical and mental health care, recreation, and a complaint process. Now, Senator Lara is pushing a bill that would require California jails to meet those same conditions. But Corey Salzillo with the California State Sheriff's Association says that's not the state's job. ICE sets the standards for immigrant detainees with local jails. And Salzillo says as long as the federal government continues to detain immigrants, they have to go somewhere.
Say the Contra Costa beds went away for whatever reason, well, then those people are ostensibly going to be housed in Yuba or Sacramento or Orange or a private facility or out of state. You know, you squeeze a water balloon and it's going to show up somewhere else.
But even as California considers stricter standards for detainees, the Trump administration has been signaling a desire to loosen them. ICE recently closed the office in charge of improving conditions in detention. Kevin Landy used to run it.
ICE detainees are powerless, and I think the federal government in this case needs to step up and make sure that it's taking adequate care of otherwise powerless people that it's responsible for.
Following media reports that the Trump administration was going to scrap the Obama-era standards, congressional leaders are making funding for ICE contingent on keeping them. Mary Small with Detention Watch Network says the current administration has shown it's not too concerned about conditions for immigrants.
From my perspective, they've already called the play. They've already signaled to their detention contractors that they don't take this stuff seriously and that it's not important to them. And so they've sort of given folks free rein to cut corners.
In a statement, ICE officials say they make sure detainees are kept safe and secure in, quote, appropriate conditions of confinement. Two-thirds of adult detainees are covered by the higher ICE standards, mostly at large private prisons. Local jails are allowed to follow a looser set of rules. In fact, none of the California jails detaining immigrants for ICE has agreed to meet the agency's highest level of care. Kevin Landy worries about any easing of standards at a time when the federal government is arresting more immigrants who have no history of crime.
Individuals with no criminal convictions are particularly vulnerable to physical and sexual assault, especially when you're housing them in facilities that also detain convicted criminals.
Senator Lara says all the more reason for California to enact its own detention standards for immigrants.
We can ensure that immigrants' rights are protected, that they have an opportunity to seek redress when they're not.
Governor Jerry Brown vetoed a similar bill last year. But given all the changes in Washington, Lara thinks this year's bill is likely to become law. For the California Report, I'm Julie Small.
Support for the California Report comes from the Wesley Foundation, improving the lives of California's children and youth at risk. Block Construction, a builder committed to enhancing communities in the Bay Area and Central Coast. BLACH.com. Block Construction. Together, building greatness. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org.
California swimmer Kim Chambers is part of a team swimming from San Diego to Mexico today. It's part of a movement called Speedo Diplomacy. She's going to go through sewage. She's going to swim by sharks. Just to make a point that water connects us all. You can find a link to read more about Speedo Diplomacy by going on my Twitter page. I'm at JohnLJC. That's the California Report for Friday, May 5th, a production of KQED Public Radio. Our engineers are Katie McMurrin, Howard Gelman, Seal Muller, and Danny Bringer. I'm John Sepulveda. Have a great weekend.